This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Yeah, authorities did manage to hack that murderer's iPhone. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. The FBI says it has been able to break into an iPhone without Apple's help using some unnamed technical strategy. This is the phone used by one of the attackers in the December shooting in San Bernardino, California, that killed 14 people. Some third party came up with the hack, but the FBI isn't saying whom. Does this development mean any smartphone is similarly vulnerable to inspection by government authorities? Well, probably not, because the iPhone 5C in question was not the latest model and didn't have the latest security protections. Eli Dorado is director of the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University.
The latest Apple iPhones all have a component called the Secure Enclave, which is essentially a little computer inside of the iPhone that's been walled off from the existing iPhone firmware. Because the San Bernardino phone did not have that secure enclave on it, that may be what enabled the third-party company to help the FBI get in. But with the newer phones, if they have that component, it's possible that the technique used by this company won't work on them. So it very much just depends on specific details of the phones that are in question.
Apple has resisted building a skeleton key that would allow investigators, presumably armed with a court order, to look into phones. With warmer weather coming to the northern hemisphere, that means mosquitoes. Those mosquitoes are the reason the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has called a Zika virus summit at the White House for later this week. From our health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Dan Gorenstein reports.
The meeting is intended to help public health officials at all levels to get out in front of the virus.
The core of the public health response is to prevent, detect, and respond.
That's Dr. Anthony Fauci from the National Institutes of Health, who says efforts are underway to coordinate a response. Most people bitten by an infected mosquito are not at much risk, but there is a link between Zika and birth defects in a rare neurological disorder. One important step is to protect ourselves from being bitten.
That sounds easy, but in fact, it's really problematic.
Maren McKenna is a writer who covers emerging infections.
Mosquito control in the United States is the politest way to say it, is that it's highly unorganized and local. They're not under the control of the CDC, and some of them are very underfunded.
Federal officials may use this time before mosquito season starts to coordinate control efforts and invest in public health infrastructure. The president has asked Congress for nearly $2 billion in emergency funding. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Now, an installment of our election year series about ways for the U.S. to get serious about long-term opportunities and threats, the ones that don't fit into a single budget year or election cycle. The late writer and social critic Kurt Vonnegut offered an idea during an interview I did with him on public TV.
Look, I'll tell you, it's one thing that no cabinet had ever had is a secretary of the future. And there are no plans at all for my grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Should the next president appoint to the cabinet a secretary of the future to consider how today's actions might play out in, say, 20 years or 50? This campaign season, we're taking suggestions about what a secretary of the future might keep an eye on. Today, we look at farming. Here's Annie Baxter.
Bruce Peterson, a farmer in Minnesota, is surveying a field where he's planted a winter cover crop of rye.
It's a little bit green over here, but it's really spotty.
He grabs a shovel from his all-terrain vehicle and digs into a patch of ground where rye shoots peek through.
The soil's nice and loose.
Peterson says the rye will make the soil mellower, which will potentially improve the yield on soybeans he'll plant this spring.
it can prove out to give us some benefits, you know, dollars and cents economically, but also environmentally.
Environmentally, because the rye will also suck up excess nitrates that can come from sources like fertilizers. Nitrates are pollutants that make their way into streams and rivers, sometimes contaminating drinking water. And they eventually wash down to the Gulf of Mexico, where they're harming fish and shrimp. Problem is, even if farmers take steps like applying fertilizer more sparingly or using cover crops, increasing rainfall in some big corn-producing states will still flush a lot of nitrates into bodies of water. Satish Gupta is a soil scientist at the University of Minnesota.
Even if you have done everything right, you're going to get some more leaching going on because our climate is also changing. We are getting 2 to 4 inches more rain now than we used to get in the past.
An even bigger fix is in order, according to Bill Tracy. He's an agronomist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
And this is where the Secretary of the Future would come in.
Tracy says we need to think critically about having corn and soybeans as the nation's biggest crops. There's not only the problem of nitrate pollution from fertilizers to worry about, but Tracy's also concerned about soil erosion tied to corn and soybean production. The thing is, getting farmers to grow other stuff is tricky, Tracy says, when there are so many economic incentives, like crop insurance or the ethanol mandate, fueling the status quo.
This is not a problem that the farmers themselves can solve.
He wants a Secretary of the Future to help shift the economic incentives to other crops farmers could grow profitably with fewer effects on soil and water quality. In St. Paul, Minnesota, I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
So if the next president were to appoint a cabinet member to worry about future generations, what would be job one? Here are your responses so far, a few of them.
The first thing a Secretary of the Future should do is enable universal education.
Fix all autocorrects and typos on people's iPhone emails so that people can take away that signature that says, forgive my typos. We should be rid of that by now.
The Secretary of the Future should prepare for the singularity.
Think about how to enable collaboration between teams that are working around the world, speaking different languages, using different technologies, so they really feel like a single team working on the same project.
Yeah, you can look up the singularity. That was Ben Williams, Caitlin Royal, Jackie Leo, and Andrea Fayville. Got an idea? Tell us using marketplace.org/Secretary of the Future. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.